A very good Monday. Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report here today. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In the show today, we'll have a report about automated insect traps for naval orangeworm and other insects with Taylor Chalstrom. And I'll have a check-in of regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
California State Senate Bill 1084 would place new restrictions on who can purchase agricultural land in the state. The goal is to prohibit foreign governments from buying California farmland. Currently, about 2.7% of the Golden State's agricultural land is owned by people or governments in other countries. In Fresno County, more than 150,000 acres of agricultural land have foreign owners. State Senator Melissa Hurtado of District 14 says that is concerning. If passed, the bill would prohibit a foreign government from purchasing, acquiring, leasing, or holding interest in agricultural land in California. Despite drought and farming challenges, experts say Central California is still one of the best places in the world to grow crops, which is why out-of-country investors and owners want to stake. There is not any indication as of yet on when Senate Bill 1084 will be up for a vote in the state Senate. Recently, USDA published the year's first data on which crops farmers have planted this year, which allows researchers to assess the effects of the ongoing drought on California crop acres. The data contain two pieces of information that indicate how the drought is affecting land use. First, farmers report prevented planting acres, which is land they had intended to plant a crop but who were prevented from doing so by a natural disaster such as inadequate irrigation water. Second, farmers report fallowed or idle acres, which is cropland not planted to a crop. The reported number of unplanted crop acres in California is at 532,000, which is an increase of 112,000 acres from 2021. Total unplanted acreage is about 7% of the state's cropland, but it remains lower in 2022 than it was at the height of the previous drought, which was 2014 to 2015. Most of these acres came from prevented planting of cotton and rice. The data are provisional. They will be updated each month until the final numbers are released in January. The final numbers have exceeded the provisional every year since 2012. In the previous drought in 2014 to 2015, the provisional estimates were revised upwards by about 200,000 acres. A similar revision this year would put 2022 fallow, idle, and prevented planting acres above the 2014 to 2015 level. Prevented planting reduced rice acres by 55% in 2022, which is much larger than observed in any other crop in recent years. There were almost no 2022 prevented planting acres in California crops other than cotton or rice. This is a big reduction in U.S. rice production. California is the second largest rice-producing state behind Arkansas, producing about $900 million in production value per year. Most California rice is medium grain, which is used in Asian and Mediterranean dishes, such as sushi and risotto. Other U.S. states produce mostly long-grain rice. In a typical year, about half of California's rice production is exported. Almost all California rice is grown in the northern Central Valley. Farmers plan to plant more than 100,000 acres in each of Butte, Sutter, and Colusa counties this year. Small quantities of rice are grown as far south as Fresno County. The drought reduced rice acres more in the western counties than those further east. Colusa County lost 84% of its acreage and Glenn lost 75%, whereas Butte lost just 17%. Butte County has greater groundwater resources, so it was less affected by reduced allocations from the Central Valley Water Project. These acreage reductions imply a market revenue loss of about $500 million, much of which will be covered by crop insurance. The California locally grown tomato season is operating on all cylinders with a steady supply of organic heirloom and cherry tomatoes. The marketplace is flush with organic heirlooms right now. They usually start trickling in mid to late July, and then they come into the full stride right about now, according to Ethan Abendroth, a senior buyer for Earl's Organic Produce in San Francisco. He says cherry tomatoes, especially the mixed medley, are also in good supply. Promotable volume of these two popular organic varieties should be available through September. Abendroth listed a handful of California growers that Earl is currently sourcing from throughout California, stretching from Santa Barbara in the south to Chico in the northeast part of the state. He says hopefully they are going to start seeing more velocity and will be able to move more product through the system. California will have good supplies of heirlooms and cherry tomatoes until the first frost comes this fall, and then they will transition back to Mexico. Each year that transition is getting smoother and smoother, he said, noting that there does appear to be an increase in the number of organic tomato producers in Mexico. At the same time, Abendroth said there are not strong supplies of organic red, round, or beefsteak tomatoes available in the summer from either Mexico or California. He said domestic growers of red rounds are pretty rare. Bobaloo Berry Farms continues on its growth track as the company celebrates 60 years of farming fresh strawberries this year in California. Another staff position has been added to help streamline packaging, supplies, and inventory management throughout all growing regions. John Knapp has been hired as procurement manager. He has 9 years in the industry, specifically with packaging, supply, and inventory management within the berry industry. Researchers in California are using electricity to kill weeds in nut orchards. Lynn Sosnowski, assistant professor of weed science at Cornell University.
Right, so Marcella Moretti at Oregon State University, Brad Hansen at UC Davis, and I'm at Cornell. We were awarded an OREI.
That's an Organic Agriculture Research and Extension Initiative grant.
Proposal to investigate the use of electricity to control weeds in perennial cropping systems, and we're all in the process of purchasing and evaluating a commercial unit out of South America to test its viability in our production systems here in the U.S.
She explains how it works.
It basically kills the weeds just like you think it would. It's a tractor-mounted, PTO-driven generator. Generates a current. The weeds come into contact with the positive electrode. The current passes through the weeds to the negative electrode, and the flow of current heats the water in the cells up. They vaporize, and that causes the cells to burst and then the tissues to die. A non-chemical strategy for weed control.
That's Lynn Sosnowski, Cornell University.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Automated insect traps, which for several years have been deployed in mating disruption programs in almonds, apples, and other high-value specialty crops, are now available for tree nut growers using conventional insect control programs. Two companies, Semios and CropView, both have experience with these traps and mating disruption programs and are confident in the technology's ability to deliver accurate and timely insect pest counts in both conventional and mating disruption systems. Abby Welch, an entomologist with Semios, explained the benefits of this type of technology.
They play a key role in helping growers and their consultants respond to two increasing issues that they face today: the increasing labor costs associated with manual traps and increased precision in treating pest pressure, given the demand to reduce dependency on traditional chemical management strategies. And so essentially, the best scenario is that an automatic trap can seamlessly replace a manual trap with minimal to no changes to the growers and the consultants process until they so choose to optimize further on the richer data that comes from these traps. When we are identifying and counting these pests caught by the traps, there are different technologies that can be utilized, such as image processing. There's some that use wing beat frequencies and some that use electrical impedance. The technology that most commonly implemented at a commercial scale is the image processing. And that technology leverages machine learning, and it provides an opportunity to review and validate those pests where the species of interest exists without having to physically visit that trap. So generally, automated traps, due to their nature, they provide a much higher timescale resolution of the counts, as they can report a wide range of intervals, for example, pest phenology by block.
As for what these types of automated traps will actually look like in the orchard, Welch said they're similar to where conventional traps are placed.
Most typically, we follow the UC guidelines for that. If there is a guideline for the pest, usually typically there is, because we're dealing with pests that are economically impactful and have been pretty well researched. So typically, we will set traps out based off of those parameters. For example, naval orangeworm, that would look like probably a trap every one for every 10 to, we can do it from 10 to 50 acres. If there's no request from the grower, we'll stick to about every 50 acres, 25 to 50 acres. And they are not right next to a dispenser for mating disruption, but they will be maybe, there may be some proximity, but not close enough for it to impact the trap more than we would expect.
Automated trapping not only allows for the obvious labor savings of not having to physically count insect numbers on the trap, but it also allows for daily trap counts.
The automated traps remove the need to have to go to each trap physically, like I had said, and you don't have to check the numbers each time. So you can just go and look daily at these traps instead of maybe every 3 to 7 days with those manual traps. And that provides and the ability for you to instantly detect action thresholds. And that gives you more time for managing logistics, such as material purchases and spray equipment scheduling, so that you can react to what you're seeing in those traps. For example, our traps are GPS tagged, and we remotely monitor them for any problems that may occur, such as a liner that may be too dirty and can't catch pests as quickly as we would want. And so we can address that pretty quickly because we have images of them daily. And then our customers also have a visual record of all of their traps. So it's a great use case for this in a historical analysis of one of our customers of different pest pressures. We can detect pests that haven't normally occurred in the field before, go back in time and use special analytics to determine whether that pest had showed up before and how much that population had grown. It is a great advantage in that sense too, over the manual trapping.
One interesting trend being seen in the industry with these automated traps is that they're actually gaining traction now in conventional orchards without mating disruption, something that hasn't really been seen that much in recent years.
Simios has been deploying automated traps in large commercial scales for about 10 years. We have about over 10,000 traps deployed globally. And so we leverage that data provided by those traps to enable our unique variable rate mating disruption to provide growers and their consultants that improved phenology and data to optimize spray programs. Given that, though, we also know how valuable those traps are to the modeling and optimizing of spray timing for these pests. So we do have and have been deploying traps more widely in an extensive portfolio of crops and regions that include mating disruption, but also now conventionally managed crops. And through this experience, we found it's important to deeply understand the performance of remote traps in relation to the grower standards. And we have addressed that through multiple publications on the topic. But I think in recent years, why it's picked up so much more in those conventional orchards is because the technology has become more affordable and more companies are able to enter the space and offer these traps as standalone services that can be deployed in multiple systems.
With more in the industry starting to use these automated traps and getting daily counts, many are starting to understand better what these trap counts actually mean, as well as the phenology of the traps and the insects themselves. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential.
from micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
In national agricultural news, the Fertilizer Institute is grateful to members of the Presidential Emergency Board who listen to rail carriers and their labor unions amid their contract negotiations. The PEB offered major recommendations on a pending contract agreement between the two. Both sides have until September 16th to evaluate the PEB's recommendations during a mandated 30-day cooling-off period. The board's recommendations include general wage increases and service recognition bonuses worth $1,000. Uncertainty of this nature is yet another disruption in an already complex environment for farmers, so a speedy resolution is paramount, according to TFI President and CEO Corey Rosenbusch. Over half of all fertilizer moves by rail every year throughout the United States, and the timeliness and reliability of fertilizer shipments are absolutely critical. He says that if the farmers can't get their fertilizer in a timely manner, it results in lower crop yields, higher food prices, and more inflation for America's consumers. National Farm Safety and Health Week is September 19th through the 23rd. Agriculture is known as one of the most dangerous industries in America. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health says about 100 agricultural workers suffer a lost work time injury every day. In 2019, the agriculture industry had a fatality rate of 19 deaths per 100,000 workers. National Farm Safety and Health Week has been held the third week of September since it was established in 1944. The goal is to help bring attention to the risks of working in agriculture. To do that, AgriSafe has daily webinars for agricultural health and safety professionals, healthcare providers, extension agents, farmers, ranchers, and their employees. This year's theme is Protecting Agriculture's Future, and it reminds everyone in the industry that the cornerstone of sustainable agriculture is healthy and safe workers. Recently, USDA started using a new export sales reporting system, and they are working to rectify problems they have had since day one of its use. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Traders in grains and oilseeds reported some surprise at USDA's weekly export sales report that came out Thursday morning. Surprise at the very large numbers in that report, numbers that, if correct, would have sent prices up quite a bit. Some traders said there was something wrong with the numbers. The export sales numbers far too high to be correct. And indeed, by late afternoon, USDA's Foreign Ag Service had pulled the sales report and put out a statement that in essence said that Thursday was the launch of a brand new digital export sales reporting and maintenance system through which traders are supposed to enter data on their export sales. In its statement, USDA said something went wrong with that system. It affected the quality of the data and the physical transfer of the information. Officials have taken the system down. They say the problems will be rectified as soon as possible. They said the problems occurred despite months of working with exporters to transition them to this new system. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And research funded by the Farm Bill helps farmers and ranchers tackle challenging issues. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on how Farm Bureau research is helping an apple and cherry grower in Washington.
Research funded by the last Farm Bill seeks ways to help cherry growers detect little cherry virus. Washington Farm Bureau member April Clayton and her husband run Red Apple Orchard, raising organic apples and cherries. She says the disease infects cherry trees through insects.
Basically, once they bite or land on the tree, the pathogens from the bugs transfer to the trees, and then the tree becomes infected. It leaves the fruit underdeveloped and undercolor, so it doesn't make grade for the market. Unfortunately, the pathogen is then spread through the root system and there's no treatment for it. So you physically have to remove the tree and there's no way that you can replant another tree because you could possibly infect the next tree that you put in.
Clayton says the Farm Bill funds research through her local land-grant university.
We live next to the Washington State University Tree Extension Research Center. Thankfully, because of the Farm Bill, Washington State University received under $1 million through the Farm Bill. So this money will go to help fund research and testing because right now the only way you can test for the virus is right at harvest time. So with more research, we'll know more and we can stop this.
Clayton encourages farmers and ranchers to advocate for Farm Bill research programs.
Get out there and make sure your local papers know and your local congressman, as well as your state and U.S. representatives. It's important that you talk to your representatives, let them know what's happening. With less than 2% of the population farming, it's up to us to let our representatives know what we need for the Farm Bill.
Michael Clements, Washington.
The Biden-Harris administration has announced more than $65 million of investments to help the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Forest Service improve water quality, roads, trails, and fish habitat nationwide. Made possible by President Joe Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law, today is the first round of $25.5 million in investments over 5 years through the new Collaborative Aquatic Landscape Restoration Program and more than $40 million for fiscal year 2022 projects for the already successful Legacy Roads and Trails Program. The investments being announced will support projects that serve rural community needs, create jobs, and improve access to national forests and grasslands, according to USDA. The Collaborative Aquatic Landscape Restoration Program follows Secretary Vilsack's recent direction to the Forest Service to take bold action to restore forests, make them more resilient to drought, wildfire, insects, disease, and to address the climate crisis. In addition to improving water quality, the 89 projects announced will reduce sedimentation into streams and restore functioning floodplains across tribal, state, and federally managed public lands. The Legacy Roads and Trail Program funds projects along with other restoration and infrastructure work to improve water quality and aquatic habitat while making transportation systems safer, more sustainable, and more durable, once again, according to USDA.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Richard Smith, Vegetable Crop and Wheat Science Farm Advisor in Monterey, Santa Cruz, and San Benito counties for the University of California, has had the opportunity to watch the evolution of automated weeders. Smith takes us through the advancements that have been made.
Automated weeders, I've really had a kind of a front row seat to watching this technology develop. A lot of the original machines came out of Europe. And so in 2007, myself and Steve Fenimore, he's our extension wheat specialist, we made a trip to Germany to the European Wheat Research Society meeting. And we saw the first, or at least the first to us, automated weeder. It was the Garfers machine out of England, and it used a spinning blade, and it would, the little blade had, it was disc shaped, but it had a notch cut out of it, and that's where it would put the keeper, we would call it a keeper plant, which is a crop plant, and it would spin around the keeper plant. And then, but it would go down the seed line and remove weeds from the seed line. The seed line is where most of the weeding battle occurs, because in row crops, you can cultivate out in between the seed lines. But in the seed line, that's where the crop is. And then that's where, the hand weeding all occurs. So it's really a place where you fight weeds. So what we want is a machine that can take the weeds out of that seed line. Around 2012, the automated weeders made their first appearance, and there's a connection between the weeders and the thinners. And in lettuce, we thin most of the stand. Most all the lettuce is direct seeded, and they put too many seeds in the ground, then they thin them to the desired stand. But what this, the machine did is that it used a spray mechanism, which is, it would spray either an herbicide or a fertilizer to take out the unwanted plant. And that mechanism really caught on. The growers saw that and they really liked it. And so that technology caught on. And then I forget exactly what year. It wasn't too long after 2012. The Robovator machine out of Denmark and the CKG machine out of the Netherlands were developed, and they started to bring those machines into the U.S. And we worked with those companies, and they started to catch on, and they use what we call a split blade, where the blade closes between the keeper plants, and then it opens when it comes to a keeper plant.
This year, great strides have been taken to make automated weeders even more precise. Smith tells us more about some of the newest technologies.
There has been the development of the laser weeders, and a machine that uses like a spray mechanism, as we talked about for the thinners, where it can do a precision spraying of weeds. And these machines have kind of changed things, because what's happened is they can get the problem with the split blade machines is they could only get so close to the keeper plant before they would actually damage the keeper plant, you know, because they had to leave a little bit of a buffer around the keeper plants in order to not damage them. And so these laser weeders and this, which is made by Carbon Robotics, which is a company that was started in 2018, so it's only 4 years old. Their machine can get right up against the keeper plants. You don't have to like have a quarter inch or a 3/8 of an inch buffer around the keeper plants. So that allows you to remove many more weeds. So that's a tremendous development. And the Verdant machine uses a precision spray of an herbicide or whatever chemical to remove the unwanted weeds. It also has the ability to get pretty close to the keeper plant. So that's really the new technology, the new development, is that we've made, I think, a very huge and significant step to being able to remove weeds right up against the keeper plants. And that kind of changes everything in terms of the kinds of situations. So, for instance, the Carbon Robotics machine can take weeds out of not just row crops, but also what we call high-density crops. So those would be things that are planted in high density that you can't really cultivate because there's too many plants out there. So that'd be like carrots and onions, baby lettuce, or, you know, a lot of the spring mix vegetables that we grow here in Salinas. So that machine is helping out in those kind of situations.
While these technologies are fairly new, their initial performances look to be promising for farmers. Automated weeding technologies are constantly evolving, and Smith said these innovations are coming at the right time.
You know, I mean, literally, this is something that's just happening as we speak. You know, this Carbon Robotics machine, they just are delivering their first machines just this summer. And that company, as I mentioned, they started in 2018. They're 4 years old, and they've made these tremendous developments in terms of developing a machine that is really helping growers address, you know, some of the more critical weed issues, you know, because the most expensive weed to remove in a production field is the weed that's right up against your crop plant. You know, that's the one, like, if you're removing it by hand, you kind of have to stop and, you know, slow down and, you know, be careful you don't hurt the keeper plant when you remove it. And this laser weeder, you know, as you can imagine, it can get, like, within millimeters of the keeper plants and not hurt them. So that, I think, is really quite revolutionary. I have not seen the Verdant machine myself yet. But I know growers who have had contact with that company, and they speak, very highly of it, in that it's also able to get in there and get plants that are close up to the keeper plants. So I think that's the big new news, are those two machines. I think what we see with the automated weeding is that it's coming at the right time. You know, there's a labor crisis, so it's not like these machines are putting people out of work necessarily. They're doing work that is not as interesting to the farm labor, and is maybe doesn't pay as well. So that's one thing I think it's important for people to keep in mind. And it's coming at a time when it's just coming at a very important and critical time.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.